Welcome to the Corner of Film podcast. I'm Niall from Corner of Film, which is a film website where I write about film. Today, I'm joined by Oliver of Oliver's Reviews. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, I'm great, thanks. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for inviting me. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, me too. I've been really excited about this. I think we're going to have fun.
Yeah.
So, for those of you who don't know, Oliver is probably the only other person I know of that watches as many films as I do. So, Oliver, what exactly is it that you look for in a film, any film?
You know, a lot of critics just want a film to be well-made and well-rounded. But yeah. I think the biggest thing I look for is just to enjoy it. You know, it doesn't have to be objectively good or not. It just has to be enjoyable to watch. And I think that's the biggest thing for me.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you know what? That's exactly what I said to myself when I started reviewing films. Was the exact same thing. If I've spent an hour and a half, 2 hours watching a film and I've enjoyed it, it's served its purpose.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's good. See, I like your reviews in a lot of ways. I find quite similar to mine in that we both try and find the good in a film, regardless of you know, what it is. I really enjoy reading that about films, and I think so many people look for the negative.
100%, yeah.
It can be quite grating at times when you're looking for reviews of a film and it's just people bashing it.
Yeah, definitely.
So I guess with that said, do you have a favourite film or sort of one that really stands out as an excellent film to you?
It's so, so hard to pick a favourite film because I love so many films.
Yeah.
So if I was to narrow it down to maybe a selection, it would probably be something like Jurassic Park, The Avengers, probably The Lion King. That's top contender for like animation.
Yeah.
It's too hard to pick, I think, actually.
It is. Yeah, do you know what? I've tried several times, even just to make a list of like favourites in specific genres, and I can't do it.
Yeah.
And I think genres themselves are quite broad anyway, really. If you think favourite sci-fi, you've got sci-fi horror like Alien, you've got, you know, like space opera, Star Wars type thing.
Yeah.
But then you've also got like sort of realistic sci-fi like Interstellar, stuff like that. And how do you pick from those? They're so different.
Yeah, exactly. And especially when, again, some of them are well made, but maybe not as enjoyable.
Yeah.
And some are poorly made, but are just a lot of fun to watch. It's really hard to like balance the two.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. So you're aware, one of my favourite films has got to be Blade Runner. That's one that, whenever anyone asks, that's kind of my go-to answer. It's not definitive, but that's got to be up there for me.
Surprisingly, I've only watched Blade Runner 2049, actually.
Ooh, that's blasphemous, almost.
Yeah, I don't know why it ended up happening that way. And I do want to watch Blade Runner, but I don't know why I only watched the sequel, which I did enjoy. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, weirdly, I've not seen the sequel. So I think everyone's got at least one of those franchises that they either watched in a really weird order or just have one gap in there.
Yeah.
They're like sort of repertoire.
So
on the flip of that, have you got any examples of films that you really didn't like?
Very recently, I watched Reminiscence, and
it
was one of the only films that I came out the cinema not really having enjoyed at all, which was kind of upsetting because everything about it was very good.
Yeah.
But someone online turned around and said a really good thing about it, and I thought it was the best way to describe it. It felt like the first draft of a script, and that's probably the best way to describe that film.
Oh, that's sad. So I was really looking forward to that. And I was thinking, oh, that looks quite good. I like Hugh Jackman. He's always quite promising. Like, in terms of, I know he's Wolverine and that's his big thing. But then he's got some good chops, like musical chops, especially.
Yeah, definitely.
And
when
you watch, have you seen Prisoners, which is another one of my favourites?
No.
Oh, he plays in that. He's a dad whose young, I think, 6-year-old daughter gets kidnapped and the police can't find her and they start thinking she's maybe dead, and he's like this small town carpenter who kind of takes the law into his own hands to try and find her. And he, in that, he is excellent, like sort of dramatically, just and I thought that looks like a really interesting film for someone like him, and that's really disappointing that it that it didn't deliver.
I think if it was to be done again, you know, I'd bring all the same cast in for, because they are all good and they all play the good roles. But yeah. It's just, yeah, it felt like they looked at the script one time and made that film the second they finished writing the script. And yeah. It didn't fall together very well.
No, and that's a shame, because I think that's quite a common theme in films that are, you know, bad films. There's usually only one aspect that ruins
yes.
it.
Yeah.
It's, you know, quite often the writing, I think. I just watched Bangkok Dangerous, the Nicolas Cage action thriller. It's not a good film, but the acting's okay. The action in it is decent, but the writing was just awful. The dialogue was wonky. There's a bit where he says, I return to my invisible world like a ghost. Like, people don't talk like that. Why is that in the film? It makes no sense. And yeah, I felt like that was just this major letdown.
Yeah.
And the ending was just sort of, it didn't really make sense. And there's this whole subplot just thrown in that goes nowhere. And it does feel a bit like they kind of just scribbled that out in an afternoon and then threw Nicolas Cage at it. And yeah, it's a shame.
Yeah.
So we'll move on to our kind of main point of the podcast. You are a huge Marvel fan, am I right?
Yes, I am indeed.
So to start with, we'll go into the MCU a little bit. We'll talk about Phase 4. We'll talk about maybe some new releases. But first, I thought it would be fun. I've written out some MCU plots, but I've done it really badly. I've got really, really wonky summaries of Marvel films. And I'm going to read them to you and see if you can work out which films I'm talking about.
Sounds good.
Okay. All right. The first one is, an arrogant man who doesn't deserve his position of power is given a new position with even more power, in which he remains arrogant.
Got to be Doctor Strange.
It is Doctor Strange.
Yeah.
Straight out. So I wasn't sure how difficult these would be. So what I've done is I've made a note of which phase the films are from. So if you do need a hint, I can tell you, might narrow it down a little bit. Okay. One man's daddy issues lead to mass destruction, while another man's daddy issues lead to a massive scientific breakthrough.
Oh, is that Iron Man 2?
Iron Man 2.
Wow.
You are really deliberate. I thought that one was really convoluted.
That's a deep cut, because if people haven't seen that film, you know, it's a hard to remember film, to be honest. It's quite forgettable. So if they can't remember it, that's a hard one.
I'll tell you what, I'll go into this after, actually, but I'm watching them all through and reviewing them all, and I quite like Iron Man 2 on a rewatch, but, you know, we'll talk about that after anyway. Okay, the next one. When the world's a mess, drugs are the only solution.
Oh. Captain America?
It is, yes.
I like that one. Okay. That's a funny one.
Yeah, I thought that's really simple, but a little bit confusing. Okay. All right, this one really made me laugh. One man is forced to go on holiday only to have his promotion stolen from under him.
Oh. That's a really hard one, actually.
Okay, it's a Phase 1 film.
Phase 1 film.
So, one man forced to go on holiday only to have his promotion stolen from under him.
Is it Thor?
It's Thor.
That's a good one. I actually really, really like that one.
Yeah. Well, I thought any mention of princes or brothers or aliens, I think it starts to become quite clear, especially, you know, Phase 1. But, yeah. Okay, right, the next one is being a criminal is fine if you're just trying to keep powerful technology safely away from the masses.
Ant-Man,
yes. Okay, all right. This is a really short one. Old friends catch up.
The Winter Soldier?
It is the Winter Soldier. I thought emphasis on old there.
Yeah.
Okay, two more. A man stands up against the government who has wronged him. He dies for his trouble.
Oh. Do you know what? I can't figure that one out.
It's Phase 3, and the man who stands up against the government is actually the villain.
Is it Black Panther?
It is Black Panther.
Wow.
Okay, last one. This one, I'm not ashamed to admit that I laughed like a child at this when I wrote it. A man goes to impressive lengths to deceive a child.
Oh. I'm going to need a hint on that one.
Okay, it's phase three, late phase three.
Is it Spider-Man Far From Home?
It is Spider-Man Far From Home.
That's good. I really like that.
So Jake Gyllenhaal is one of my favourite actors, and I think he's an excellent casting for Mysterio. Like, he was brilliant.
Yes, he is, yeah.
But all I could think of when I watched that film was, he's so obviously lying to this poor boy. Like, I just couldn't get that out of my head. So,
yeah.
Those were my badly explained MCU plots. I might actually try and think of some more for another time, maybe.
Yeah, they were good. I like them.
Yeah. So let's talk Marvel. I guess a good place to start would be talking about the recent release in Shang-Chi. So I know you've seen it. I haven't. So do you want to maybe just share your thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, you know, like we said earlier on about if a film is enjoyable, it can be seen as good. Yeah. And I think that's probably the best way to describe this film, because I was slightly underwhelmed with aspects of it.
Yeah.
But to counteract them, there was a lot of very good stuff, some very great representation, you know, in it. And the things with the rings in the film are amazing, expanding the mystical side of the MCU further, bringing in some really great new characters, a fantastic villain played by Tony Leung, and you know, references to the MCU back and forth, that even if you are fresh to the MCU, will you be able to enjoy? You know, you don't have to have known any of the stuff that leads into this, even though there's not too much. It's more, if you're a diehard fan, the references will add to your enjoyment of the film, but they're not too important in that sense. They're not necessary for you to enjoy the film. It's very, very enjoyable. That's probably the best way to describe it.
Oh, that's really good. So, I mean, I know a fair bit about it, but I've obviously not seen it. I do think, though, correct me if I'm wrong, I feel like it sort of continues this, I don't want to say tradition, because it's fairly recent, but what started with, I guess, Captain Marvel, in that was a really solid standalone film. You know, again, you didn't, I guess partly because of when it was set, you didn't really need any prior knowledge of the MCU at all to enjoy that film.
Yeah.
And I think that's the biggest thing that alienated some people for sort of late phase three, is it had all become so sort of intertwined that you couldn't go into one film having missed another one.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And yeah, I like that they're sort of trying to make them a little bit more, not separate as such. Like, I know there's going to be a lot of crossing over still, and with No Way Home is as much a Doctor Strange film as it is Spider-Man in a lot of ways. And
yeah,
you know, I think there's still a lot of room to do that. But to be able to make it just a little bit more accessible, to bring back some of those, sort of make them Easter eggs as opposed to plot points. Do you know what I mean? The Marvel references.
Yeah. And if anything, they need to state more that the connectivity is important to certain projects. Like how Doctor Strange, they've constantly spoke about Multiverse of Madness connecting with Spider-Man and WandaVision. Yeah. And like things like that. They need to emphasize the point that you have to watch something to lead into, like a sequel or a prequel or a spin-off. They have to be blunt and honest with people. If you haven't watched it, you won't understand this.
No, and I think, like, especially with No Way Home, what they've done is they've basically just every sort of interview, it's not just Tom Holland. It's Tom Holland and Benedict Cumberbatch. They're there together. Yeah. They're both very much the stars. And so, you know, even subconsciously, you just know it's you know, they're essentially on equal footing.
Yeah.
They're both Avengers. They're both a big part of this film. I think even just doing that, instead of sort of really beating you over the head with it in the film, if they do it right in the promotion, you know, you go in knowing that.
100%, yeah.
But I think, I don't know. So I guess my main kind of I've talked on about this on the podcast a few times, is I had a bit of a Marvel burnout where I just stopped watching the films, stopped caring. I got to a point where I was sort of overwhelmed by it.
Right.
This was sort of leading into Infinity War. I don't know why in retrospect. Like, I really don't understand why that point was where I decided I can't be bothered anymore.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm sort of caught up. I've still not gotten up to sort of WandaVision, Falcon and the Winter Soldier. I'm watching all the way through again now to kind of reacquaint myself. But
yeah,
I think that was my biggest fear sort of post-Endgame, was that it was just going to be even more confusing. You know, there's some big changes that happen in Endgame. You know, characters die, characters retire, for lack of a better word. I was kind of the opinion that, do you know what, that's just going to make it even more confusing. Have you found that to be the case at all? Or do you think it's really, like, Endgame has really kind of narrowed the playing field a little?
I completely understand what you're saying with the whole idea of feeling burnt out, because a lot of people I spoke to around the time of Infinity War, just before Infinity War,
yeah,
were very on the note of, I'm done, I'm not watching anymore. And that was even before Infinity War was out. And then it came out and they were like, wow, I'm actually surprised with what they've done. Maybe I will continue. And then a lot of people have then gone to Endgame and said, well, Endgame, that's it. MCU's dead after that. And I kind of, in one hand, I understand what they're saying, because it's the end of one big Infinity saga. But I think Phase 4 so far has done an excellent job at bringing the balance between new and old heroes into this next stage of the MCU's evolution. And I know we don't know what this new saga will be called yet, and probably won't know for 10 years or something, but the balance is probably what is keeping old and new fans alike to stay with the MCU. Because, you know, the first one we had was WandaVision. And I know a lot of people who, when that was announced, didn't care whatsoever. Because they didn't care about Wanda Maximoff, they didn't care about Vision. I think COVID probably helped in one respect, because there weren't anything else to watch. But a lot of people then loved WandaVision and moved on to the Falcon and Winter Soldier, two characters who have been with us for a very long time.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Loki, that's one of the oldest characters we've got. So it's a really good balance between old and new. And then these projects are pushing the new forward as well, with characters like He Who Remains, Kang the Conqueror in Loki, and Yelena Belova in Black Widow, who will also be in further projects. And, you know, I think that's the best thing about the opening to Phase 4, at the very least.
Yeah, I think, see, that's basically, I mean, that's kind of what's won me back over, is not actually, I mean, I've still not seen any of the Phase 4 stuff, but it's the general sort of marketing and the approach that they've made has sort of caught my eye again, because they're bringing back, they're bringing into the MCU a lot of characters that I love. We've got Blade coming, we've got Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
You know, these are characters that I think what they've done is they've started with specifically, you know, Falcon and the Winter Soldier and Loki. They're characters that a lot of Marvel's core audience have either grown up with those characters. Like, I know a lot of fans will have been kids really when Phase 1 was coming out, or people who have stuck with the MCU since day one. It does bring it back for them. So they've got these like fan favorite characters, they've given them stories, and then they're kind of, okay, but also in the next few years we're going to be introducing this character and that character and this one. And, you know, the casting of those characters is, Blade in particular, they could not have gotten a better actor than Mahershala Ali.
Yeah.
You know, he was like born to be Blade. I think he's just, you know, I think he'll be a better Blade than Wesley Snipes. I know that's maybe a little controversial, but it, objectively speaking, Blade needs to be in the MCU.
Yeah,
I'm really excited for that. I love Fantastic Four as characters.
Yeah.
So I'm really excited to see where they go with that. And yeah, I think they've really doubled down on making it accessible to fans of Marvel that weren't necessarily still interested in the MCU. You know, I love the comics, I love the idea of the MCU, but I just got to a point where I mean, I'll be honest, I've never been that attached to Iron Man as a character. So Endgame wasn't a massive deal for me in the way it was to a lot of people. I love Spider-Man, always have. And,
yeah,
you know, again, Tom Holland is, they couldn't have got a better actor for Spider-Man. He's got,
could not have, no.
You know, he's got everything Spider-Man needs. And then Spider-Man as well for me is a big childhood thing, and knowing Spider-Man's kind of rogues gallery and Spider-Man's there's a lot of crossover potential with Spider-Man,
yeah,
and knowing that they're starting to use a bit of that in, you know, bringing in Doctor Strange,
yeah,
I would really love to see, I know it's not the most likely, but I'd love to see Charlie Cox back as Daredevil, because I thought he was excellent.
So yeah, he was amazing in that role.
Yeah, and the thing is, these are all heroes that work closely with Spider-Man, so yeah, it would be so easy to bring them in casually, and that's sort of, I think, what's happened a little bit in sort of going forward, is they do bring these characters in, and they include them in other people's shows and other people's films, and then, like, Hawkeye is only just now, this year, getting his own series, and he's been a part of the MCU since 2011?
Yeah, same goes for Black Widow, though, when you think of it, you know.
Yeah, true.
It's only,
yeah,
taken, I mean, her 10 years.
It's, oh, more than that, I guess.
11, yeah. Yeah.
Well, she was first in Iron Man 2, wasn't she? So yeah, 11 years, yeah. Crazy. And it's good to see that they are giving those characters that little bit more attention, but also that they're kind of trying to do things that are a little bit more comic focused, maybe a little bit more traditional, I guess, in sort of how they're doing it. That is exciting for me, I think.
Yeah, same for me, definitely.
So what is the next Marvel release? I cannot think. I know Hawkeye's November.
As what of right this second, it should be Eternals. Fingers crossed.
Oh,
Disney,
of course.
Disney have said that they're not delaying anything at the moment, and that everything the rest of this year will have a 45-day theatrical release window. So after the 45 days are up, it will go to Disney Plus, which I think kind of confirms that they don't want to delay things. So fingers crossed, nothing big happens between now and then. So we should get Eternals the 4th of November.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, so this, again, I guess it's not specifically a Marvel thing, really, but this sort of move that they've just announced this sort of a couple of days ago, haven't they, that it's going to be sort of theatrical releases, or at least for a good 45 days. I think it's a sign that we're sort of moving back to normality, but also, I mean, do you find that maybe this is a little bit telling about the Black Widow situation, the Scarlett Johansson lawsuit?
You know, I was really thinking hard about, like, is this much a reaction to that, or more that Black Widow opened, if I'm not mistaken, July, middle of July, and were things still not good in July in terms of film releases? Oh. That's what I'm really trying to think. And
I thought it's one of two things, really. It's either them saying, okay, well, we're going to really publicly announce this and make sure that everyone knows, literally everyone in the world with an internet connection knows, that they are exclusive theatrical releases for the first 45 days.
Yeah.
And they're doing that as a means of essentially currying public favor back towards
them.
Yeah. They didn't mishandle Black Widow, but this is how they're doing it now. Everyone knows, no one can complain. But I also think they might have looked at Black Widow and thought, we didn't earn as much money from that as we should have done. Yeah. And they also might have to shell out, you know, another 50 to 100 million in terms of damages, or at least in terms of settling with Scarlett Johansson. And I think they need to do what they can to avoid that happening again. Because, I've still not seen Black Widow, but it didn't do well by Marvel standards.
No, it didn't.
I think it was the lowest grossing film since Incredible Hulk, which is...
I actually don't even think it beat the Incredible Hulk, you know?
That's terrifying.
Yeah.
Maybe it was the lowest opening weekend.
Yeah, I think it might have been.
But, you know, and being honest, Incredible Hulk was not a good film. It was... I did not... So I guess this is a good way to go into talking about my Marvel rewatch, but I was fairly young, I guess, when the MCU started. I was a teenager, but, you know, I was prime audience for phase one, really.
Yeah.
I remember loving Iron Man. I enjoyed The Incredible Hulk, loved Thor, Captain America I was a bit indifferent towards, and Iron Man 2 could not stand, thought it was boring. Rewatching them, I feel like there's not really one film that I actually feel the same way about now.
Yeah.
Whether that's sort of in retrospect or because I've gotten older. But Iron Man 1, objectively a very good film. I'm not that keen on Tony Stark as a character. But in terms of the film itself, the way it sets up a universe without going over the top in sort of introducing different aspects, I thought was really good. But then I thought Captain America, that I didn't enjoy before, I actually really liked this time. I thought, yeah, this is a pretty good film. Like, it wasn't the best, but again, it introduces the character well.
Yeah.
Incredible Hulk, I used to enjoy. And having watched that recently, I just thought, what is this nonsense? Like, Ed Norton as the Incredible Hulk, is it's all wrong. I mean, what are your thoughts? Did you like Norton, or are you a Ruffalo
I
man?
I prefer Ruffalo. And it's I think the Hulk is one of those very divisive characters in the MCU because I know a lot of people that hate Mark Ruffalo as Hulk because they don't like his Hulk rather than his Bruce Banner, which in one way I kind of understand because I didn't like Edward Norton as Bruce Banner rather than as Hulk.
No, I think that's a fair point. I just think Hulk is a character that is so hard to do in live action. Ed Norton didn't seem particularly interested in it, to be honest. He seemed a little bit like he wanted to be anywhere else. And the CGI just wasn't there then. Well, I say that. That was the same year as Iron Man, and the CGI in that film still looks great.
It was a year before Avatar, and Avatar holds up. So,
exactly. So, hard to sort of think, okay, but where did they go wrong with Hulk then? Because it was only a few years later, and the Avengers got Hulk so right. And I understand that people maybe don't enjoy Ruffalo's Hulk as much, but they've, I think, done the right thing in they've not given him his own film. He has always been not a supporting hero, but he's very much part of the team and not his own character. And I think seeing him sort of, he works really well as part of the team. He works really well in amongst the other heroes. He bounced well off of Tony Stark. He bounced well off of Thor. Him and Black Widow had, I quite liked that.
You know, so did I.
Sort of subplot. Yeah. I know people hated it. I thought it was quite sweet, but I have yet to find anything about Mark Ruffalo's performance in particular that I didn't like. I thought he did the character well, but that film, the Incredible Hulk, I know it wasn't Ruffalo, but you know, I just did not like it whatsoever on a rewatch. Are there any that you kind of just don't enjoy, or is there any that kind of stand out for you as ones that have aged really well, really badly?
I don't think any of them particularly I don't enjoy. I think the closest maybe to not enjoying one would be Iron Man 2, and I think that's just because, like, the second I turn it off, I kind of forget that it's happened. It's one. It's very forgettable for me, and I think that's my only real issue with it.
Yeah, it did have its issues, definitely. But I mean, I put in my review, this was a while ago, so I can't really remember it that well, but I did put in my review that I'd forgotten what a good job that film actually did, because it took Iron Man 1 and it used that story and it kind of explored the implications of it. You know, this former arms manufacturer is now making he's made this suit for himself. Why isn't he sharing that? Should he share that? It sort of poses an interesting question that the first film sort of asked without asking. And so Iron Man 2 took that and it used that as the basis for the story. But it also introduced a villain that, fair enough, wasn't very good.
Yeah.
But, you know, Sam Rockwell was really funny.
He was amazing in that.
Yeah, they could have given him a bit more to do, I think. And he would have been... But as it was, it got a bit jumbled because that you had Whiplash, but you also had Hammer, and it wasn't really clear which one the villain was.
Yeah.
And you had one villain who was quite cartoonish and one who was a little bit more layered. And you had, you know, just all these different aspects that weren't quite gelling.
But, yeah.
I mean, I think the biggest thing about Iron Man 2 is, to me, it's a very in-between sort of film. It links Iron Man 1 to the Avengers. It sets up the Avengers. It sets up Tony Stark's sort of link to the rest of the team in a way that, you know, maybe Iron Man 1 should have, but they didn't know that that's the way it was going to go at that point.
Yeah.
So I think it's a necessary evil, Iron Man 2, and I think people need to give it another chance, really.
Yeah.
It is sort of seen as the worst phase one, often, I think, and I don't know that that's fair.
No, I don't think it is.
Yeah, have you got a favourite? That's the big question.
Favorite overall or just...
Yeah, overall.
Overall as in any Marvel or just MCU specific,
would you say? That's a good question.
I could do both.
Oh, yeah, do both. Let's hear it.
Favorite MCU, even though I know that like Infinity War is a better made film, I still think Far From Home is just my favorite MCU film, because it just, it's the first time watching an MCU film, or actually any Marvel film at all, where I felt related to the lead of the film. Like, all these characters are meant to be relatable to some extent, but I've never related to a character more than Peter Parker in Far From Home.
No, I do think that's the beauty of a Spider-Man. He's very much every man, and Tom Holland captures that so well.
Yeah.
And yeah, you're right. Far From Home is a very good shout, actually. I hadn't even thought of that, because I think mine might be Captain Marvel.
Really?
Do you know what? That's the most recent one I've seen, because I put off watching it when it came out. I don't know why. I just wasn't really overly interested. Yeah. And it's only been in the last few months that I actually watched it. So I was watching them in timeline order. So I did Captain America, then Captain Marvel. And that was my first watch of Captain Marvel. And it was so solid.
Yeah.
There wasn't a single aspect of it that I thought was out of place. It was paced well. It was funny, but it wasn't. It didn't try too hard. It just had everything. And I thought Brie Larson was amazing.
Yeah.
She's a lot of fun. And I liked young Nick Fury. I liked seeing him as a slightly more lighthearted character. I thought that was a nice touch. I thought having Coulson involved as well, like, it makes sense from a narrative point of view, but it was also a nice little nod for fans. But again, you don't need to have that knowledge of the MCU sort of in a wider sense to enjoy that film.
Captain Marvel did a very good job of that, actually, despite the fact that it, you know, like, it's after credit scenes linked directly into Endgame. It was a very solid standalone project.
That was my takeaway, definitely. So go on then, what's your favorite non-MCU Marvel film?
I'm gonna have to go with Into the Spider-Verse, because it balances everything I love about superheroes with everything I love about animation, and on top of that is I think it's the best comic adaptation, even though it doesn't take a specific comic story. It takes a load of different ones and chops them together, and some original stuff on top of that. I felt like I was watching a comic book.
Well, that's the thing.
Yeah.
Yes, it's an adaptation almost in a completely different sense, in that it feels like they've put the comic on the screen. And so I did talk about this with Jack on, we did a 2-hour long episode a few weeks ago, which was a nightmare to edit. But we talked about all our favorite animated films, and that was in there.
Yeah.
And yeah, that is an exceptional film. I hadn't even thought of that when I was thinking, okay, non-Marvel films. I was thinking, obviously, you've got all the pre-existing Spider-Mans, which are a big, maybe for me, especially Spider-Man 1. I was like quite young when that came out, and I was all for it. But I think, controversially, I do really enjoy the Fantastic Four films.
So do I. Yeah.
Do you know what? They get so much hate, and... like the first one, 2005, with Jessica Alba, that it's not a great film, but it's pre-MCU.
Yeah.
And for the time, that was as good as superhero films could
be. 100%, like, yeah.
And it's aged quite well. I mean, the effects still look decent, considering.
Yeah.
Yeah, I enjoyed that film. Rise of the Silver Surfer, not so much. That wasn't great.
No.
And I didn't hate the reboot that they did, the really transparent reboot that they made. Was it 2015?
Yeah, 2015, yeah. My biggest issue with that film specifically is, like, it's just pacing really mucks everything up. Because I think Michael B. Jordan was actually a really good Human Torch. I didn't think much of Miles Teller as Mr. Fantastic. But I think it's, like, because of the route they were going with the film... knowing full well this is only step one in a franchise.
Yeah.
Which films shouldn't plan like that, I don't think. They should Easter egg things for a potential sequel, yeah, but not make a film specifically knowing you need a sequel to make the first one actually a better film.
Definitely. And it was just generally a little bit, you know, I mean, there were problems with the direction, wasn't there, as well? Yeah. And they sort of overruled Josh Trank quite
yeah
a lot. And he,
yeah.
But, you know, it's easy to talk about how bad that film is because, like you say, there's pacing issues. There's a really weird sort of black-grey colour scheme all yeah the way through.
Yeah.
It didn't feel very Fantastic Four.
Exactly, yeah.
But they did a decent job. It wasn't as bad as people say, I don't think. But, yeah, I don't know. I think it's between, for me, non-MCU, Spider-Man 2 or the Spider-Man 2 with Tobey Maguire, not the Amazing yeah Spider-Man 2.
Yeah.
either that or Fantastic Four, the original.
Yeah.
But, yeah, they... Superheroes haven't really been done right outside of the MCU. Not really.
No. We've had a few things like Logan, you know, Logan,
yeah,
incredible. And, you know, there's certain things here and there, but there's nothing solid, consistent.
So, I mean, I think actually that's a point. I hadn't even thought of X-Men. I do love X-Men. The first X-Men film is,
yeah,
it's a bit, again, like, I mean, that was, what, 2000, I think? So that's yeah not great in terms of how it's aged, but it looks a lot better than, even than, like, The Incredible Hulk from 8 years later. I think it's yeah still quite impressive.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I find that, I mean, superheroes are quite difficult, I think, really. And I think Marvel have nailed the formula and they've really got it right.
Yeah.
But where do you think it is that, you know, something like... DC, where do you think they're going wrong in their films? Because they're not doing very well, and I can never put my finger on why.
I think the biggest issue for DC isn't even a DC issue. It's a Warner Brothers issue. And it's that they're so scared to allow their creatives to actually be creative.
Yeah.
That they want to rip apart everything they do. You know, the biggest blunder that DC ever had was the whole Justice League situation.
Yeah.
And I watched Zack Snyder's Justice League, which I loved. I one of my favorite superhero films now. And yeah then I rewatched Joss Whedon's Justice League
yeah
about a week or two later. And I actually enjoyed that original theatrical cut when I watched it the first time round.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing else to enjoy. If that
yeah
makes sense, like
yeah
you don't know what the other side of the coin is,
yeah,
and then you compare them, and it's a shell of everything that was good is gone.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I've not actually seen all of the Snyder Cut, to be honest, but I liked Man of Steel. I mean, I loved Christopher Nolan's Batman trilogy. I thought
yeah
that's like peak for me. They're some of the best superhero films because yeah they're done. That's how Batman should be done, quite grounded and quite, you know,
yeah, definitely,
almost
yeah
gritty, but not too much. But I think Man of Steel tried to do the same thing and it was interesting. I'm not sure how I feel about it exactly, but you know, they did a sort of grittier take on Superman. It felt very sci-fi as opposed to superhero.
Yeah.
And I liked that they were trying something different. And I thought, okay, well, it's exciting. And then they cast Ben Affleck as Batman. And my first thought was, oh, no, please, no. And then I thought, no, give him a chance. And I liked him as Batman. Yeah, I thought he made a good Bruce Wayne, like that sort of older, yeah fed up kind of Batman I quite liked. And I think Batman versus Superman, that's where the problem started for me. Did you,
yeah
did you feel the same? That it was... not as much the heroes in the villains. The Doomsday, the decision to make Doomsday a Lex Luthor clone.
Yeah, see, I'm not as in the know with DC Comics, so I couldn't... I never had that opportunity to really say, well, this isn't how it should be done. But no, I could still see there was something wrong. And again, yeah, the biggest issue with that film is the fact that Warner Brothers keep on poking. You know, that's yeah the issue with most of the DCEU films, that Warner Brothers literally won't allow people to make the film that they've been hired to make. And they yeah re-released Batman v Superman It was either early this year or late last year with a 4K remaster. And it weren't just a 4K remaster. It was actually, I've got it right here. I think it says remaster on the, yeah, it says remaster on there, but yeah. it was a recut where the IMAX film was actually put yeah. into it, and it was recolored and contrasted. And I think there was added score and maybe a couple of added scenes, even yeah. on top of the Ultimate Edition scenes that we already had.
All right.
And it was just better, even though it wasn't what was originally like scripted, because Warner yeah. Brothers never even let Zack Snyder film those added bits.
Yeah.
But it was still better than the theatrical cut because it weren't poked at as much.
Yeah, see, this is the thing. Like you say, they don't want their creatives to be creative. It is very much that. And it's also this whole thing of you'll be as creative as we say you'll be yeah. creative. You can do this or this or this and nothing else. Yeah. And you know, the whole Doomsday thing, like, I don't think that these adaptations should necessarily just completely take the comics as gospel.
Yeah, definitely.
I think, and even just in comics alone now, every character has so many different iterations, so many different origin stories, even, you know, that there's no one definitive story. Yeah. And I don't think it matters if the film wants to go off that track a little bit and explore, maybe we do it like this, maybe we do it like that. It was just, I felt like it wasn't done in a way that was respectful to fans. I just felt with Batman versus Superman, it was just let's just make it a Lex Luthor clone. That's, you know, and I remember talking to a friend about it who just said, well, what was that? Like, why, you know, if they want to do it, fine, but explain it. Like,
yeah.
That wasn't explained. It just happened. And then then there was this whole thing of, is that Doomsday? Is that supposed to be Doomsday? And then they call it Doomsday. And you feel robbed because, like, Doomsday is a massive villain in the comics. That Doomsday is the one who kills Superman, and it's a whole arc, and it's a whole, you know, big thing. Doomsday is this Kryptonian nightmare monster, and they just made it like a weird genetic experiment, and it felt cheap. Yeah. But that's, I think, DC. What I think the biggest, sort of broadly speaking, the problem is that what they've done is they've tried to emulate Marvel without emulating Marvel.
I think they tried to emulate without actually telling the people making the films that that's what they're trying to do.
Yeah, as well. Yeah, they wanted to sort of make this sort of, oh yeah, well, we have a unique approach. And it's not a unique approach at all. And it doesn't need to be a unique approach, but tell the stories of the characters and do it yeah. in a way that, like, take something like the Justice League TV series, you know, the animated series that,
yeah.
I mean, that's one that I loved as a kid as well. And even as an adult, I can watch that and really enjoy it. And take that and adapt that a little bit. Don't, yeah. you know, just try and sort of pull off an Avengers type event. Take a Justice League story and tell it as if you are actually telling a Justice League story.
Yeah.
I mean, that said, though, I also think Ezra Miller's Flash is great. I think Jason Momoa, to be fair, I'd support him in just about any role. But I won't see Aquaman 2 for reasons clear. I sort of am at a point now where I refuse to support, well, Warner yeah. Brothers in general, really. And it's, I know that all of these corporations yeah. have these things, and they're big studios,
yeah.
it's big money, and they have the directors they want, and they do this and they do that. But the Joss Whedon stuff alone, when you look at, you know, the things that Ray Fisher was saying about the
yeah.
Justice League shoot and about Joss Whedon, and not only did Warner Brothers allow it then, they basically just sort of tried to smear Ray Fisher when he came out and, you know, were you keeping up with that? It was a while ago
I keep up with all of it, and I think the thing that is, it's not just it doesn't just anger me, it actually just upsets me, because like they've not yeah. actually done anything. Not to say what Warner Brothers is doing, if they had a reason to do it, it would be acceptable, but like there's not even a reason for it, you know, the whole situation with Zack Snyder yeah. as well. Putting all that blame on a person who's grieving over the death of his child. Like, how can you do that to someone? And then the whole Ray Fisher situation, the
When it was the excuses that it wasn't even an excuse. It was just, we've looked into it. We're satisfied there was no wrongdoing done. Yeah. Like, stop complaining. Yeah. That's a slap in the face to anyone. And, you know, it sort of belittles Ray Fisher and what he went through. And it's become clear since that the other actors had very similar feelings, but it were essentially threatened into being quiet.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, you've got this Amber Heard stuff. Yeah. And we won't go into that because I'll get quite irate. But, you know, it just baffles me how, you know, they're not even making good films. That's the thing that annoys me the most is these films aren't even that good. And they go into all this trouble to make them and be awful to their actors and directors and everyone. And the end result's not even particularly impressive.
Well, I think it's spite, literally. They're doing it out of spite at this point because, I mean, I don't know if you heard it. I think it was only this week that America finally got Zack Snyder's Justice League on like physical copies, DVDs and whatever. And Warner Brothers, the trailer to advertise that the film had finally come to DVD was an unlisted YouTube video. So you can't find it unless you search for it. Like, what is the point of that?
Yeah, that's, I mean, that's Warner Brothers all over, I guess.
Yeah.
Really. Yeah. I think for me, though, it just cements this idea that DC are basically doing a poor man's MCU.
Yeah.
I mean, how else can you describe it? You've got, you know, Marvel were putting out some real quality stuff and have consistently done that.
Yeah.
For a long time now. And they're also going to these great lengths to kind of make sure that what's coming out is going to be good for the fans, that they're trying new things. So, you know, I know I mentioned on your trailer reaction that I've just written a piece about how Hawkeye is sort of a lot funnier maybe than people were expecting. And I think that's just a really positive, I don't know, not improvement, but do you know what I mean? Development.
Yeah, evolution is the word I like to use.
Yeah, that's the one. It just shows that they're taking, you know, I felt like Hawkeye was, he wasn't done properly, really, to start with. He was barely even a sidekick for the first sort of few films he was in. He was a footnote in Thor. He was the butt of all the jokes in Avengers. And he only had about 10 lines, and most of them were because he was the bad guy for most of the film. You know, and then sort of it wasn't until Infinity War that he was actually really given any depth whatsoever.
Endgame, not even Infinity War. Endgame.
Yeah. And then, you know, it just feels a bit like, okay, but how, and they sort of almost ended his arc then.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways. And sort of to see this trailer, I mean, anyone who's not seen it, definitely go and check it out because it's going to be a Christmas thing, which is exciting, I guess.
Yeah, the MCU hasn't had Christmas since Iron Man 3.
No, and do you know what? When I read that, I was thinking, hold on, was Iron Man 3 Christmas? Like, I don't remember it being anything to do with Christmas.
Yeah,
I just remember there being snow at one point.
Yeah,
and it. I mean, I guess that's quite telling in itself that it wasn't memorably anything to do with Christmas, and it's a fine line to walk because you don't want to make it like a Christmas special, although we will have the Guardians of the Galaxy, won't we? The Christmas special. And like, I think that's quite funny. But the you know, they've got to walk this line between making it about Christmas and making it about Hawkeye, but at Christmas, but making it Christmas enough, which is interesting. I think they can do that quite easily. But the comedy, seeing a funnier side of Clint Barton is exciting, I think.
Yeah, definitely. Because I think the only like humanizing part of his character through the MCU was the, you know, the farm stuff in Age of Ultron.
Yeah.
And people don't like Age of Ultron for some reason. So people have this idea that Hawkeye is a poor character because he doesn't have any like redeeming things. But his redeeming thing is in Age of Ultron that people refuse to watch. So you're losing on both fronts.
Well, he's just been criminally underwritten, I think.
Yeah, definitely. And
I think Jeremy Renner has got quite, I think he's quite capable of doing funny.
I
can't think what he was in. He did something that he really made me laugh in. I can't even remember what film it was.
It was in a film called Tag. It might be no, that. I've
not seen that, but I have heard he was in it. But it was something, I think it was a really small like bit part where he might have even been playing himself. but either way, I know that he can be really funny. And
yeah,
I'm excited to kind of see, because obviously up until now or recently, I think Tony Stark has been the real, he's been the real funny character.
Yeah.
You, the real sort of crowd pleaser. And I think Thor gets his moments, but he's been a little bit more tragic in the last few films. They've sort of made him a little bit more, he's lost a lot and he's grown up a lot. And Star-Lord is, he's a sort of quite funny character, and they've got their sort of established comic characters.
Yeah.
And Hawkeye just wasn't one of them. So
yeah,
I'm excited to see that going forward. I think it will distinguish him a little bit from the rest.
Yeah, 100%.
Okay, so I guess to sort of conclude the MCU talk, and the, I mean, we talked a bit about DC as well, but to conclude the MCU stuff, which upcoming sort of Marvel show or film are you most excited for?
You know, it's a very hard question because I am very excited for absolutely everything. But if I go with the closest stuff first, it will have to be Spider-Man because I just love Spider-Man. And to go further out, Fantastic Four.
Yeah, I think, do you know what? I think I'd probably answer exactly the same.
Yeah.
I can't. I am excited for Blade. I'd like to see Blade finally done.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think there's, it is all promising, all of it.
Yes. Yeah.
Fantastic Four is, I'm really excited to see that be, because they're another one that just should be a part of the MCU. I mean, they're a team to start with, but they're also very much part of the Avengers. So
yeah, it feels right to fit within a bigger world.
Yeah. And I felt like that was one of, especially sort of the first couple of Avengers films, Spider-Man was a real conspicuous absence, but so were the Fantastic Four. And the fact that they're both coming in is exciting. But I would, my biggest hope is that we do see Daredevil and that it's Charlie Cox.
Yes. Yeah. With a multiverse, anything is possible now. So, well,
this is true, but I mean, I'd like to see him given a real, like, because I thought that series was excellent, and
yeah,
I'd love to see him get an actual film and see Daredevil done properly, because that was not a good film. yeah. Well, Oliver, it has been absolutely amazing to talk today. I've had a wonderful time. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for inviting me on. I've had a blast.
No, well, if you're up for it, I will definitely have you back on at some point soon.
Would love to.
Yeah. Well, thank you, everyone, for listening. And if you're not already, you can follow Corner of Film on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at Corner of Film. You can also follow Oliver on Instagram at Oliver's_reviews. He writes a lot of reviews. In fact, he writes more than I do. So if you if you're interested in the latest releases or even just the latest news, he'll steer you through. So drop him a follow as well. If you want to follow me personally, you can do so at Lord of the Grey on Twitter. I quite often share the things I'm writing for Screen Rant and the things I'm writing elsewhere. So if you're interested in that, go and find me there. Lastly, please do subscribe or like or rate the podcast on whichever platform you're listening on. It really does help give us a boost, and I would be very, very grateful. Oliver, thank you again for joining me. Thank you all for listening. I've been Niall from the Corner of Film podcast, and you have been listening. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. Goodbye.